That's a new record from a group called Young Bird. Change of Life is what they called it. It's on the Canyon label, and you are listening to Native Solidarity News here on your local community radio station. It's a group actually from Oklahoma, and we have a guest right now as we enter the feature part of the program from down that way. Her name is Liz Gray, and I was very happy to find on the internet a couple of articles she wrote for Native American Times, just published out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, on diabetes prevention, and it's really one of the few places in print that you're going to find an alternative perspective on diabetes, a different line from the why are those poor Indians getting sick spontaneously. And you can check it out for yourself. The website is www.okit.com, and you can look in the May-June issue for part one, and part two is in the June 2001 issue. Also want to mention there's an excellent article by Lorelei DeCora called The Diabetic Plague in Indian Country, Legacy of Displacement, published in the Wakaza Sa Review, Spring 2001. So I'd just like to welcome Liz to the show and just ask you to introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Liz Gray, and I'm the founder and co-publisher of the Native American Times newspaper here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I have found myself going down this path of getting information regarding diabetes in Indian Country, and it just seems to keep coming, so I've started the nonprofit organization to complete that.
So, up here we're hearing a lot about the non-Native press are always publishing articles on different problems in Native communities, whether it's corruption in government or health issues, and it's often portrayed as a kind of a shaggy dog story. Can you talk about what your perspective on the media spin is, and look at what you've actually seen as the real fundamental issues going on here?
Fundamental issues regarding diabetes?
Yeah, why is there such a high rate of diagnosis of diabetes among First Nations people in not only in North America, but let's start there.
Well, one thing I would like to say is it's not only the Native Americans that are becoming diabetic, and pardon me if I say Native American or American Indian, I switch back and forth. There are other minority groups that, when introduced to the Western diet, become diabetic. And there's a book called Western Diseases, Their Emergence and Prevention, written by Dr. H.C. Trial, who followed this Western diet and everywhere it went across the world to various traditional cultures, illnesses followed, and one of them was diabetes. If you look at the American Indian plight, many of them are on economically depleted reservations who they only have a choice in eating is federal food program, which is high in refined carbohydrates and very low in anything healthy. In Oklahoma, a lot of the tribes do have access to other federal assistance programs that let them have fresh vegetables, fresh meat, and that type of thing. But if you're just going to eat refined carbohydrates, you need to remember that carbohydrates are sugar. And it's not taught in very many places. That's simple fact. It's eighth grade science. And many of the food producers and pharmaceutical companies are manipulating the information that gets to the public. And part of that information is to focus on fat. Well, if they used to call diabetes sugar diabetes. Now they don't. And because a person focuses on fat, low fat, low fat, they forget to focus on the other aspects of diet, which is carbohydrates.
Right, and excess intake of carbohydrates turns to fat.
Yes, it depends on the carbohydrate. There's complex carbohydrates and simple carbohydrates. If you think about it, where does sugar come from? It comes from a really starchy, low-fiber plant, like a sugar beet, or today's modern corn, you know, corn syrup or fructose from fruit. They eliminate the fiber and totally concentrate the carbohydrate in that natural product. And that's not the way nature intended. It didn't intend for us to have this super, you know, flood of carbohydrates into our bodies. And prior to this refining process that we do with our foods, we American Indians did not have such a high intake of refined carbohydrates. As a matter of fact, it's pretty much zero. And you can say that the many tribes had corn, but the corn that they had was quite different than today's sweet corn you find in the grocery store. Today's sweet corn has about 40% more starch or sugar than traditional corns did. And those were, we invited a couple of people to our last conference, Return to Your Roots Diabetes Conference, which we plan to have another one in October. And their goal is to reintroduce traditional foods to the tribes. And there are some people, they call themselves seed keepers, and they have kept they have seeds of the original corn plants, that breed, I guess you will, that the tribes use. So that's an exciting aspect, getting back to traditional foods for health. Because prior to 1936, Indian people did not have diabetes. Yes, some of them had more exercise, but no one had diabetes, not even if they had a broken leg or they were immobile or they were elders, especially juveniles. They didn't have juvenile diabetes. So I don't really think the whole answer is that we exercised more in the past. We've got to look at what did we eat.
Well, how did it happen that people who developed these crops no longer even have access to the foods? How did it happen that, let's say, you're living on a reservation somewhere and all there is white flour products? You know, it's and this also is something that is not, as you say, is not just a Native American issue. Traveling around most of the continent, you can't find foods that many cultures for thousands of years have relied on, like grains and legumes, right? How did it happen that food has come to be what it is?
You know, I think if we were to realize that a food can be a drug, or can be, if we realize that it's poisonous, we would have a different attitude toward it. But the Indian people at one time did not have access to anything except the federal food program, and that's where you get the fry bread. I mean, shortly after World War II, we were introduced to white flour, sugar, coffee, and, you know, bacon. What can you make of that but fry bread? And today it's turned into a joke. One reason, I think, is because if you can't do anything about it, then, you know, laugh it off. But when the knowledge is lost of traditions and elders and were influenced by commercials and TV and just habit, I think it's hard to break. That's one of the important issues that we will need to look into, is breaking this habit, because there is a change in the brain when a person eats refined carbohydrates. You get that feel-good feeling. Your serotonin goes up, your insulin goes up, so your energy rises, and it only lasts a short while. That's why you're hungry 2 hours after you eat a donut, when you're really not, after you eat maybe eggs or something. And there's a close relationship to hypoglycemia and alcoholism. 88% of alcoholics are hypoglycemic. That's another, I'm not an expert in the field of alcoholism, but there's a Dr. Larson that has written a book called 7 Weeks to Sobriety. If anyone ever wanted to learn about alcoholism and its relationship to food, I would highly suggest you read that book, because Indian people have they're susceptible to being hypoglycemic, which is can help stimulate alcohol addiction feelings. They can be allergic to wheat, which can also cause an addictive reaction to alcohol. They have one less enzyme in the liver to regulate alcohol. And plus, if you're stuck on a reservation and all you have are the refined carbohydrates and no emotional supporting nutrition like essential fatty acids and amino acids that help regulate the brain, then it can cause depression. Your diet can cause depression. And that's one of the things I would like to talk about at my next conference, is get experts in there to talk about how our foods used to support our emotional well-being as well as our physical well-being.
We're going to take a little bit of a music break here. On the phone is Liz Gray from Native American Times, and this is a real honor to have you on the show to talk about diabetes from quite a different standpoint from that a lot of us are going to hear anywhere else. So thank you, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes while we listen to some music from the Tohono O'odham Nation. This is a group called Southern Scratch here on Native Solidarity News. That's Southern Scratch here on Native Solidarity News, right in the middle of our feature, talking about diabetes in rural and urban Native communities and really non-Native communities as well. Our guest, Liz Gray, of the Native American Times in Tulsa, Oklahoma, has helped give us some background on, in particular, the federal food program, which instituted certain dietary habits, particularly on reservations. He mentioned that diabetes wasn't known in Native United States before the 1930s, and the 1930s is also the time of the Indian Reorganization Act and the institution widespread of the reservation system and the sedentarization and taking away people's land. And you know, this is way past the point where the government stopped making treaties and people's ability to provide for themselves was assured. Of course, you know, we've talked on the program before about the deliberate killing off of the buffalo as part of attempted genocide against Plains First Nations. There's just so many issues here that that go beyond that any kind of interpretation that would say that it's some unfortunate accident that there's so much diabetes in Indian country, as people say. So now, Liz, one thing we didn't do in the first part is actually just talk about a little bit more about what diabetes is, how it affects people's lives and the life of the community as well.
Now, I'm not a physician, but what I do as a journalist is collect information from experts such as Dr. Walter Willett of Harvard University, Dr. Schwartzbein of the Endocrinology Institute of Santa Barbara. And I wanted to point that out because a lot of people say, well, what expert, you know, why does she have the right to talk about this stuff? And many of these physicians in the outskirts of today's medical arena always refer back to what we were designed to eat physically. And there's a book out called The Paleo Diet that said that the body is most healthy on eating raw nuts and eggs, fowl, types of meat. That, you know, we did eat meat. That's why there's a lot of issue about, well, how come we didn't have diabetes if we ate a lot of buffalo? It's because the buffalo meat does not, free-ranged meat is much more healthier than stockyard cattle. They have access to free-ranging and grasses and things like that, so we've corrupted a lot of our foods. And the essential fats found in fish was also found in buffalo, and it's funny how some of our traditions, such as eating raw liver right when the animal is killed, it was for nutritional purposes as well as spiritual purposes. Now we know, nutritionists will tell you, that the liver has a really high content of essential fatty acids and the good fats, omega-3 fats, that our bodies need. Our brain is 60% fat. Our cell membrane is made up of fat. So if you're putting bad fats like hydrogenated oils off the grocery store shelves and French fries and those type of things made out of the bad fat, it can affect our cells. And that's one thing that causes insulin insensitivity, and it causes the sugar to get trapped in the bloodstream. So if your cells are rigid and you're not insulin sensitive anymore, one thing to do is to get back to eating the good fats nature intended, which is kind of hard to find. If you can't get a hold of fresh fish or farm eggs or free-ranged animals, it's kind of hard to find. But also to regulate the sugar that comes into the body. Juice. People think that it's good for us to drink juice, but if you look back 100 years ago, we didn't drink juice from 5 or 6 or 8 fruits. in one sitting, and we didn't drink it year-round. Fruit was seasonal, so our bodies had time to rest from these high bouts of carbohydrates. So there are two different aspects here. One is something called the glycemic index, and it's easy to find on the internet, and it tells you how fast foods turn to sugar in the bloodstream. And believe it or not, a slice of white bread turns to sugar faster than table sugar, or cranberry juice raises the blood sugar faster than Pepsi. So it's not all innocent foods out there we're eating, but what they have in common is being processed and refined. So if a tribe is interested in getting the health back of their people, look at what we ate before these refining processes. And I'll tell you, it's all based on money, as usual. If a company can process out the good fats out of a product, such as nuts or wheat, they process out the nutrients, then it doesn't rot as fast because the nature's bacteria doesn't want it. There's no nutrients in it. So it has a long shelf life. Therefore, it's cheaper to store, it's cheaper to ship, and it lasts longer. So there's a higher profit in a high processed food. And that includes the oils on the shelf. They're really high processed in very high amounts of heat, in the many of them hydrogenated oils are processed in the presence of nickel. They're bleached and bleached again, and then they're put in bottles and put on the shelves. It's really a dead product. So a lot of there are a few tribes out there that are realizing that their people are not getting healthier on these recommended diets, so they're getting back to traditional foods. The Winnebagos are reintroducing the buffalo, and the Haudenosaunee, which is the Iroquois Confederate tribes of New York, were just given some land to grow organic foods on the land, and the Fort Peck are looking into getting back to traditional foods. So there are a lot of people out there that are starting to realize that we once were healthy, let's look back and see what we can do to get back to that state of well-being. And the Intertribal Bison Cooperative work with a number of tribes to try to reintroduce the buffalo to those tribes that had buffalo. Some tribes were gardeners. But
so you're talking about a situation where not only has food for First Nations and all people been denatured, but again, for all people, it's the food that is eaten in a certain place, most of it comes from somewhere else, and the decisions that get made about how it's grown, how it's processed, get made somewhere else. And if you're talking about specifically reservations, which is a colonial imposed living situation, mm-hmm. That problem is even intensified. One of the threads I wanted to pick up on that you mentioned in the first part of our discussion was about people doing seed saving, and this is something that I'm particularly interested in too, again, because the food issue is something that touches everyone, and it is a planetary crisis. And to talk about, with so many people living in the cities now too, it's easy to forget how basic it is to have land and be able to decide how your food is grown. And uh-huh. You're talking about organic food, talking about eating liver, but now, if you're talking about a factory farmed animal that's being fed on, other animal byproduct or starch,
right,
instead of grasses,
uh-huh.
and all the pesticides grown to make and
mm-hmm.
that go into that, it's no longer healthy. You really, the only, it's part of the solution is returning to traditional foods, but it's also how it's produced. And Indigenous people have developed all kinds of varieties of crops like beans and corn and so on, like you talk about, that are different from the commercial varieties on the shelves. And a lot of food companies and pharmaceutical companies are really coveting these now as sort of new profit engines. And mm-hmm. you know, how is this all going to stop? And people are just going to butt out? And
well, there's one thing that I'm really concerned about is the genetically altering corn and the seeds. And Monsanto is a large company that genetically alters foods and has patents on many of the corn seeds. And to me, that's frightening that a person can own a food product of any kind, that it, and it may grow across the country, and we may no longer have individuals holding their own seeds. And I think it's time for us to have faith in ourselves again, to look at what we knew before, because we, many of us have forgotten, many of us have just took for granted that someone else knows what we need and knows what our diet is. But I've seen diets that are designed around this low fat, totally low fat, not focusing on good fats, and forgetting about the carbohydrates. The American Diabetes Association, I don't know if they still do or not, but they used to have a pyramid, a food pyramid on their website that said eat 6 or more starchy vegetables a day. And it, at the bottom of their food pyramid, it had a picture of potato and bread and pasta, which is a really refined carbohydrate. And that kind of worried me. So I think we need to get back to protecting Mother Earth and protecting those seeds. Because if you think about that traditional seed, it has a its own genetics inside that can grow this plant, grow this medicine, and it holds wisdom. And we've got to protect it from getting lost. And I think we need to get back to protecting Mother Nature and realizing that we are ill because we are not in tune with it anymore. And if we need to raise organic crops that we want to sell, I don't see a problem with that, because the next big industry are organic foods. Many people are becoming leery of these huge food producers that put hormones in the animals and genetically alter different foods. And a lot of people are turning to organic foods, and I believe that it could be an alternative to gaming, that some tribes could look into raising an organic crop and selling it under the name of the tribe, and it could possibly become a success story and also benefit many people.
We're running low on time here, Liz, so I'd just like to invite you to add anything that you would like that we haven't had a chance to talk about.
Well, I was inspired by your call, and I am getting our website ready 2 weeks ahead of schedule. So if everyone would like to look at the website and possibly be interested in coming to our next conference titled Return to Your Roots Conference, it will be in October, but write down our web address, traditionalhealth.org, and it should be ready next week. So people can write their views, write their ideas, and we'll be glad to post them. We're going to do stories on the different tribes and the different things they're doing to take care of their people. So I really am excited about this radio interview, and I appreciate you asking me to come on.
I'm really glad that we had the time to do this, and as you said, to take the time to put words to it. I think it's been very inspiring, and I hope that people listening will check out the website and we'll learn what can be learned from this. I'm going to also give the phone number for the Native American Times, if that's
okay.
All right.
Great.
It's this is in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's 918-438-6548, and you can talk with our guest, Liz Gray, yourself. And we're going to come back on Native Solidarity News and give the contact information one more time. But I'd just like to say one last time, Liz, thank you very much, and wish you all the best with your work.
Well, thank you, Adam.
Liz Gray from Oklahoma, and she has a couple articles that we're going to tell you about right after we listen to some music from the Native music world. This is Rage Against the Machine. Yeah, all kinds of things coming your way out of this cultural mix happening in North America. So I hope you enjoy that, and back to wrap up in a moment here. That is Rage Against the Machine from their album, The Battle of Los Angeles. And that was our feature tonight on diabetes. And I'd like to thank our guest, Liz Gray, very much from the Native American Times. Again, if you want to get in touch with her, there's a phone number and a website, actually two websites. So the phone number is 918-438-6548. The website that Liz mentioned is traditionalhealth.org, and you can also check out her articles published by the Oklahoma Indian Times, or okit.com. That's May, June, and June 2001. Also, there's an article by Lorelei DeCora, really good link between diabetes and colonialism, in the spring 2001 issue of Wikazo Sa. That's W-I-C AZOSA. That's published by the University of Minnesota Press. And I also like to thank Andrea Smith of CHSR Fredericton for putting us on to Liz's website. And that's going to do it for this week's show. Got one more piece of music and words for you. This is the person whose story you heard read a little bit earlier in the evening by Gretchen King. And I'd like to thank Gretchen also for coming in to do that reading. Her name is Kinney Starr, and she, like Rage Against the Machine, like a lot of people, is part Native and part settler, I guess you could say. And anyway, this is her CD that she has out called Tidy, and we're going to listen to something called Grandma's Bicycle. And I'd just like to thank you for being along for Native Solidarity News. Hope you enjoyed the program. Merci d'avoir été là pour l'émission Les Drôles des Premières Nations. Si jamais ça prend d'autres renseignements sur l'émission de ce soir, il suffit d'appeler en tout temps au 514-486-0246 ou encore envoyer un courriel à l'adresse nsn@tao.ca. Alors qu'on écoute Kinney Starr. Bonne semaine. All right, let's try that one again. This is Southern Scratch going on in the background. Alright. Getting this one set up. Yes, this show does come with a sense of humor sometimes. I am through with this whole damn world and its overwhelming bad taste. I